We want to welcome you to the first Masterclass podcast, and it's our pleasure to have Reverend Dr. Tim Tang joining with us from the Tyndale Intercultural Ministry Center. And along with Tim and I today, we've got Michael Fredericks from Emmanuel Truro, we have Leonard Anderson from Emmanuel Hammond's Plains, and we have Hannah Bartlett from Hannah. Give me the name so I don't forget it. Cornerstone. Yeah. I was going to say Phil's Church, but that may not be the best way to start the conversation.
By the way, the one in Truro is Emmanuel with an I, and the Hammond's Plains one is Emmanuel with an E. It's very important we make that distinction.
Yeah, thanks for that, Michael. It's it is important, and that was not planned, but it works out well. Tim, welcome. And for those of you who are listening to this and haven't had the opportunity to join us on the masterclass session, Tim's just completed working with our first masterclass for the CBAC, and he's taught on cultural intelligence. And so, Tim, thank you for that, and welcome to the podcast.
Great. Thanks for having me.
So as we get started, I just want to throw out a question to get us the conversation rolling. And but I'm just kind of wondering, what was the thing that Tim said today in the session that really caught you off guard or surprised you and said, I didn't know that. That was information I needed to have. And so, Hannah, how about if we start with you?
Sure. I feel like I gain so much from you, Tim, every time that I have heard you. What really stood out for me this time around was, again, just the difference when you talk about intercultural and multicultural. Those are kind of two different terms, and I wonder if you would speak a little bit more to that. Why do you say intercultural versus multicultural?
Okay, so tons has been written on this. So I'm really, again, just skimming the surface of it, right? When I think about it, I mean, the marketing around multicultural, in Canada it's everywhere, right? I mean, that's what we pride ourselves on. We're such a multicultural country, and we are. I think we really are. But multicultural on some level just states that there is diversity here and that cultures are here, but in many of our communities, the Koreans kind of do their own thing. The Chinese kind of does their own thing. The Jamaicans kind of do their own thing. And it's great that they found community, that they found flourishing neighborhoods. And yet there's no relationship crossing those siloed communities, right? And so that's really where, to me, the intercultural conversation becomes, well, how do we start bridging those differences, not just for the sake of being happier together, but hey, what am I missing from that part of the body of God's creation that perhaps I'm missing that I need to be enlightened on? And I can be a better person for that, and I can be, closer to the image of God. So to me, the intercultural is, that interaction, that communities coming together, leaders really interacting, getting to know one another, trusting one another. I mean, when we think about our, and to a very practical level, on when we look at our recently dialed or recently messaged people on our iPhone or whatever phone it may be, I mean, are they all looking like the same as you when you look at the profile picture, right? I mean, and that's okay, but I mean, have you learned to diversify what God's really created in abundance around us? And I think that so many of our churches have so much to learn beyond the isolated enclaves, if I can use that word, of thought that unfortunately is being missed. So that's where I like the intercultural idea.
Yeah, Michael, what about you?
Well, just expanding on that, I think this what really caught me off guard was during the presentation, of those of you who missed it, the people that I trust list, right? So going through and just thinking about, we only had about 5-10 seconds to do it, but if I was really going to, I was continuing to think about it after the list went up, who are the people in my life that I trust? And I was thinking about friends mostly and some of the mentors in my life. And I was kind of shocked in that almost everybody on that list, white, straight, married men, almost completely. And I thought, holy cow, that's not good. But then I was thinking about not only that, but the preachers that I listen to and the books that I read, the podcasts that I listen to, exactly the same thing. So even beyond my own personal contact circles, the things that are influencing me in other ways, the same thing. So, wow. So I guess one of the things I'm wondering about is I guess it's easy enough to find these other voices. I just got to be intentional about it, right? I think that's what struck me, being intentional. When I was living in Perth Andover, New Brunswick, there's a huge Indigenous community there, right next door. And I was shocked when I first got there at how little interaction there was between our church community and the Indigenous community. So over the course of several years, I made intentional efforts to build relationships and build connections. And it really was intentional work to do that. But it was really positive to build those friendships and listen to those stories and hear those voices and make those connections. Now I've moved to Truro and I've been here just about a year, or it's been just over a year. But COVID happened. And so like making those connections with people here that from the Indigenous community haven't happened yet. So I'm looking at this and thinking, okay, one of my next steps for sure has to be, how can, even despite COVID, how can I figure out ways to make some friendships and connections with the Mi'kmaq community right next door here. So it really challenged me. So thank you for that. It really was an eye opener for me to do that little exercise.
No, thanks for sharing. And I think that, yeah, I mean, even I think for all of us that, I mean, I really wanted to make it, wanted to make it practical, right? So what does it mean for us to self-examine and to say, well, you know, and again, it's not to say that your friends that you trust are bad. There's nothing wrong with them at all. But, you know, if we're going to speak to a wider audience in some way, shape, or form, like, are we informed at all around difference of opinion, right? And yeah, for us, you know, we're under the Tyndale umbrella of the institution, and that's the number one question to professors. Like, when you go down your reading list, are they all of the same gender, background, ethnicity, you know? And it's okay, it's not to say that they don't have a voice, but, you know, at what point does that really train our leaders in our community to say that, hey, you know, only white male American evangelicals have a voice at the table? And they don't. I mean, they have a voice, but there's so many more voices that we're missing, right? And it becomes eye-opening to say that, oh, you know, and you know, I do find with a lot of people too, that they'll try different things intentionally, go out there, and they're like, oh, yeah, but Tim just didn't like it. And then you have that opportunity to say, well, why didn't you like it? Like, what was it that was different that made you uncomfortable? Well, is that really a flaw? Or maybe is that an area that you need to grow in terms of understanding that maybe there's storytelling differently that you can learn from? You know, a really basic, sorry, take a quick tangent, is sometimes when we do training, we will say, you know, you've spent your entire life watching Hollywood movies. Hollywood's great, but have you ever watched Bollywood movies? Now, why don't you spend a month just watching Bollywood movies? You know, because after the first movie, they're like, well, why is everyone dancing? Great. You know, the dancing's great. But eventually they get to a point of saying, oh, they're telling stories differently. The things that are important to them are different. Well, why are they different? Okay, well, now start understanding the historical context. Start understanding what's shaping their culture. And I think that, you know, it's as easy as that to start expanding our thought to realize that God's created so much for us to glean from. And yeah, I mean, this conversation around growing reality, and I love that you're here, Michael, and talking about First Nations, is that this isn't just for us to redeem the new communities that are coming, but the First Nations for us as Canadians. How do we not? I mean, it's to me an intercultural question, that when we started settling in Canada, we weren't intentional to actually sit and listen and build intercultural relationships with First Nations. And this is not, you know, just huge criticism. We obviously made a lot of mistakes. So how do we redeem that in terms of building that skill set?
Good question. Lena, what about for you? What did Tim say in the session that you kind of went, oh, I didn't know that, or I needed to hear that?
What I needed to hear, first of all, I thoroughly enjoyed the entire presentation. Thank you so much for the information leading to our transformation, I hope. but what I thoroughly enjoyed was you defining the continuum. I never heard someone defined from denial to polarization And then you said, and the majority of leaders are in the minimization. That was like, woo, 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 woo. I was like clapping and cheering because I didn't have verbiage. I didn't have language around that spectrum and that continuum. And to realize that although I'm engaged in many conversations, having the courageous conversation, people taking the posture of humility and asking and me leaning in and being traumatized all over again. but hearing you say that the majority of leaders, even leaders in the Christian church, are in the minimization, I said, okay, it was a aha moment. Now I can understand why the conversation is shaping up the way it is, just the de-emphasizing. You said, that this whole all lives matter, I don't see color, I'm colorblind. And not even, and while I know what their heart is, Lennon, I see you as an individual, I see you as a person, I don't see color, but they don't even know it's a denial of who I am. This is, my ethnicity is part of who I am. My culture is who, please don't deny that, you know? And so you speaking into that just gave me so much thank you. And that was a aha, because I did not have the language to shape that.
No, thanks. I mean, the way you're expressing it was really the way I felt when I first discovered the continuum, right? It was like, oh, it's not just these people are right or wrong, or these people are racist or not racist. I mean, sure, racism has to do with it, but if we're all on this discipleship model of growth, well, then how do I continue to grow, right? And you know, for me, placing myself on the continuum, I mean, there's definitely a moment where I was like, what? I scored that low, right? I mean, and, you know, I'm doing training on this, right? But I think that bringing us to humility, I mean, that's the goal as we disciple make, right? I mean, how do we humble all of us and ourselves, even as trainers, become humble ourselves to realize that we have a role to play in terms of our own growth? How do we embrace that, own it, and say, hey, how do we continue to develop? And there's still a road to go for every single one of us, no matter a new person in the conversation or somebody, you know, an experienced leader. Hey, we're still on this journey together and we need to keep growing.
And I guess my continue would be, how do we help individuals move in the continuum? How do we journey towards change so that I'm not stuck in my ideology? Right.
So that was rhetorical, right? Was that an actual question? Was that rhetorical? Like,
I'm waiting for the answer.
That's the magic question, right? I mean, because everyone's different. So I mean, that's the challenge I had. Trying to make this practical for my own church community. Knowing that the people in the pews, and at our church we have three different congregations based on language, but then we soon realize it's not just language. I mean, again, like an iceberg, there's a cultural ramification to this and different people are at different places. I mean, it literally took us 10 years to realize that when the leader said, hey, we want unity, the three congregations meant something different. That unity, you know, to the Mandarin congregation, they meant conformity. They want everything the same, every sermon to be the same scripture, the same application. When the Cantonese said unity, they meant harmony. Let's just not talk about our problems. Let's not get in any fights. We might have problems, but we'll never talk about it again. Harmony is great, and it is unity, but it's not the same as the English congregation, who when they said unity, they meant, hey, codependence. We want to see how we can lean on each other, expose our weaknesses so that we can help one another. But the word unity became a stumbling block because, yeah, everyone likes unity. And so realizing too then that the congregation and then the leaders and then our deacons and pastors were all at different places. So yeah, at our church, I've run that assessment for everyone. I mean, and we continue to run it, right? So we can get snapshots, not just to say, hey, you're terrible, but hey, where can you grow? And how do we grow together at different points in our journey? So, it's complicated. It's never easy. It's not like, you know, here, read this book and you got it. But yeah, how do we navigate this together with sensitivity, knowing that some people really are just at the beginning of the journey? So if we say to them, let's dismantle systemic racism, they're like, what? Like, you know, and if you hit them at that high level, it actually turns them away from the conversation. And again, you know, like Jesus, you meet them where they are, and then move them forward, right? Encourage them forward, love them forward, because people are all at different places.
Oh, that's so good. That's so good. If we go to the next question, was there anything that you need clarification on? So is there anything that Tim brought up that you kind of go, oh, could you just sharpen that for me? Or maybe I didn't catch it all.
I was thinking about that assessment that was described and thinking, man, like, how do we do that in our church context? Like, so obviously you've done that in your church context. You just mentioned that. Explain to us practically what that looks like. Is that like in a small group setting, or you got like a special event, like a conference? Like, how do we put that on? Because I think it would be really, really helpful for our churches to gain that self-awareness, for people in our churches to gain that self-awareness about where they're at.
Yeah, good question. And I mean, it's so tough to answer because every context is different, right? And every community is different. So, what I would say is that it depends on context in terms of level of engagement. So at our church, as much as I've run the assessment, I've definitely have not run it at for every single congregant and every single member, because that's just not where we are, right? We've tried to be very flat in terms of our hierarchy and governance as our church between the three congregations, which then means, though, that depending on where you are engaged in the church, your level of cross-cultural relationship will be at different intensities, right? So somebody new to the church within the last year or so, I mean, we will not push them and say, hey, why don't you do some cross-cultural discipleship in the other congregation, right? Because they would be like, what? Why am I at this church, right? So whereas, so we'll often say that depending on your level of leadership or your how center you are to our larger leadership and community, the more center you are, the more cross-cultural you need to be. So, depending on where you are in that, I mean, we will, I've done one-on-one debriefings with our pastors because they're at the center of day-to-day interactions between pastors. Whereas a mission group just doing cross-cultural mission for the first time, I mean, I may do a general scoring for them and just say, hey, you guys as a group, be careful when you guys are acting together and responding to somebody who's different than you. You might have a tendency to do this. So it does vary and would come down to, what's the readiness of the community in terms of level of engagement. I would say too, I mean, as much as we're offering this as a service, I mean, we are hoping that eventually other people from across the country, you know, local leaders become qualified assessors as well, right? Because I think eventually, yeah, we definitely don't want this to become, oh, the Tim Center proprietary, you know, discipleship method. But hey, how do we join together hand in hand to realize that, hey, things going on the East Coast, it's a very different conversation than the West Coast. And the West Coast is going to be different than the prairies. And so how do we link together? But we're all on this training journey together. So, I mean, I'd be happy to talk together at, you know, different local levels to see what does that look like. And for me, even just to even learn, hey, how could this really work out in this community here? And for me, I mean, I know I'm enriched the more I talk to different leaders who are trying to figure out, hey, how does this work? I mean, I just got off an email with and hoping to have a face-to-face with one of the children's leader in our denomination. And when I did the training for them 2 weeks ago, I mean, for her, all these lights went off and she was like, Tim, I want to implement it to our denominational team and I want to implement it to our local church. And can I start doing this in our neighborhood? And I was like, well, hold on, like, slow down. We can't do this all today, you know, but you know what makes sense? Let's have a chat. And eventually, I mean, as she was describing it, I was like, oh, I wonder if eventually I can get her certified as a trainer too, because she's so excited about using it. And become a partner, a collaborative partner because I'm sure she's in context that I have no idea about. So, It can be multi-leveled as necessary, but definitely every community is going to be different. So how it rolls out is going to be different.
Something I really appreciate, I know I have done the IDI with Tim actually, so I've had the humbling and wonderful experience of thinking that I'm in one place and not being in that place. But I think it is that self-awareness piece that is the foundation to every other step that you take. Because once I became self-aware of that, and I know, Tim, you've been so gracious when you met with me afterwards to say, here are some concrete steps you personally can take and that you can take as a leader to move you along to the next place. But I do wonder if even just we're lacking that self-awareness sometimes as individuals, as leadership teams, as whole congregations, and that it's a really great thing even just to become self-aware of where we're actually at.
Thanks, Hannah. And really, I mean, it's that's the starting place, right? I mean, you know, understanding where we're starting from. I mean, that's applicable to any discipleship, you know, paradigm. Hey, figure out where you are, and from there, understand that that's where you need to start your growth. You know, if we you know, for me, when I look at scripture and Jesus teaching about prayer, right? I mean, he doesn't say to everybody, just memorize the Lord's Prayer. It's great. The Lord's Prayer is fantastic. But if a really seasoned Christian who has been wrestling with, you know, this and that and everything for like decades is still just sitting there memorizing the Lord's Prayer, it's good, but hey, there are a lot of other intercessory prayers and breath prayers and solitude conversations that we need to talk about. But on the other hand, you know, if you take a new Christian and say to them, okay, go out into the wilderness and fast for 30 days, you know, and, you know, and let the Spirit of God dwell on you. And they'll be like, what? What does that mean? Right? So how do we become aware of where we are, become aware of, hey, what do we need in terms of growing right now? It was great working with you, Hannah, and the other leaders. I mean, just to begin that conversation. And what was really interesting in that group, yeah, that group had, I'm like, which group was, that group had a good amount of leaders from across the border, right? And so just in that, I mean, having leaders from the United States and leaders in Canada, again, not good or bad, but we had our differences in terms of how we see things. And so being able to work one-on-one with leaders and then work together as a group was a great example of, hey, let's start with, okay, that group was all female leaders. Great. So it's not just the male-female thing we're going to talk about, but hey, there are some differences regionally, north-south. There are some differences across the country, east-west. And then let's break that down even more when we think about our cultural background and heritage and values that we bring to the table.
Tim, do you also see that in a generational demographic as well?
Yeah. Sorry. Let me push back. What do you mean by that?
Often we talk about it and some people get frustrated because they don't see it as a real breakdown, and some people maybe overemphasize it. But I'm thinking like the boomer, the builder, or I guess the builder, the boomer, Gen X, you know, millennial, and now Gen Z or Z, depending on what side of the border you're on. And I live right beside the border, so I get it mixed up all the time.
Yeah, I mean, there's a few books on generational intelligence, right? I mean, I think I think I read that recently. You know, and I do think that there's such a difference in mindset in terms of generations, and this is where to me the conversation is exciting, because you know then we start talking about intersectionality and different identities that we have. So at times I know I'm speaking as a Gen Xer, right? As the slacker generation, right? Whereas at other times, I know I'm speaking from a Chinese leader, and that's significant. And yet at other times, I know I'll flip back and forth depending on the context I'm in. I know I'm speaking as a Canadian leader. And it's not that those other identities don't matter, but they will tend to emerge at different places depending on the context that I'm in. But the generational one is a huge factor, right? The Gen Ys and millennials, they have no idea about the Gen Xers, mainly because the Gen Xers are such a small population. They really are, right? That's why we're the forgotten generation. The boomers have no idea about the Xers, mainly because we're so small, actually. So it's that, and hey, our world was so different. And again, it's not good or bad. I mean, you know, I think about my kids who are digital natives. To them, there just always was Netflix. There was never a time when there was no Netflix, but apparently, you know, my son came home today and he couldn't find one of his favorite TV shows at school on Netflix. And of course, he was troubled that he couldn't find the show. My first response was, why were you on Netflix at school? Right? But to him, it wasn't even the issue. The issue was, why does my show not exist anymore? And so it's, you know, that our mindsets are so different, which is neither wrong or right. Sometimes it is wrong. And so how do we identify that, redeem what is good, what God has created, and move from there. So I think generation does have a huge part to play as well.
So, Lenet, we didn't get a chance to give you the, was there anything for clarification purposes that you had or that you were thinking about?
Certainly, especially when Tim started talking about East meets West. My ears just opened, and I wanted you to speak into that, please, because I know you talked about the collective versus the individualistic approach or mindset. I can honestly say we have many of the diaspora in our congregation, many from the motherland, several countries represented. And while we at Emmanuel, while we always had a sense of honor in our culture, our African brothers and sisters brought an honor that was foreign to us, almost an honor that put the clergy on a pedestal, if I could say, such a respect that was not Canadian at all. And so when you said East meets West or West meets East, I just wonder, how does that play out in different levels? Because we are very different in our approach and how we our engagement with society.
Yeah, no, great comment. And just in that, I mean, yeah, our more Eastern-minded friends, you know, tend to be just right there in terms of hierarchy, positional authority. I mean, you know, when I meet leaders who are more Eastern-minded, I mean, to them, they could never call me Tim, right? Because that's like, oh, what do you mean you're my friend? No, you're my pastor. Oh my goodness. Like, not only am I going to call you Reverend Tim, I'm going to stick with your last name because that's your family name. I'm going to call you Reverend Tim. And as a Western mindset person, if I react to that and say, oh, come on, why are they making this so formal? I'd be dismantling the opportunity I have to connect with them, right? So sure, call me Reverend Tang all you want. That's fine. But when I treat you as a friend, as a brother or a sister, let that message be to you that as God's representative in this community, I'm treating you as a friend. And so, you know, don't just react to, oh, they're calling me Reverend Tang now. But then I'll turn to the English congregation and they've never called me pastor for the last 10, 15 years, right? I mean, so, but equally, I shouldn't be offended on that end. But hey, how do I start with being their friend and then move into a position of influence and where they can respect, where I can show them, hey, my faults, but also speak into their lives. So it's acknowledging that, hey, with that emotional intelligence, it's, hey, what's making me uncomfortable right now? Identifying, well, what is it? Am I uncomfortable just because I'm uncomfortable today? Or am I uncomfortable because of something that's a cultural value? And then moving from there, meeting them where they are again, and moving that forward in terms of that conversation or that connection. So the, you know, great analogy there, but yeah, the newer African friends or community that are here, hey, there's the danger too that we often find in popular culture, right? And we'll keep talking about, well, the Black community, and well, they're all just the Black community. No. Okay, so here's my humility example, right? I mean, I did some training for one of the older Black churches in Toronto, and so I did my research. I looked up, you know, Jamaican ethnicity, background. Hey, how do I understand Jamaican culture? And I did, within the first 10 minutes that I showed up, hold on, Tim, we're not Jamaican Black. We're Nova Scotian Black. And I was like, what? Like for me.
First Baptist, Huron Spadina. I know it. That's the Scotian church.
So my friends there, I mean, lovingly, they corrected me. And I was like, what? Because I didn't have that framework that, yeah, Scotian Black is a different conversation. It's neither good or bad. But hey, if you're not realizing that, I mean, I totally stuck my foot in my mouth for the next half hour until I reoriented myself, right? So that in itself, I mean, it teaches us that, hey, yeah, don't just do your homework, but the moment that you realize that you haven't done enough homework, so how do you manage that? How do you manage your own emotions around that as you're working with that community? And to realize that, hey, this is a much more nuanced conversation than most of us realize. So
that's great. Yeah. So the final question, and we want each of you to have an opportunity to ask Tim this question, is like, what question do you have for Tim that may specifically apply for where you're at and how, you know, you're looking at the world from your chair of leadership in a local congregation and trying to kind of understand how to put this together? Here's your opportunity to ask Tim the question that could make all the difference in your congregation for the next 5 to 10 years. Who wants to start?
Well, I'm going to jump on because God has richly blessed us with a unique mosaic. And I celebrate the diversity here in the house. And we try to be very intentional on representation. I loved your quotes at the end. And one of the quotes was, I don't see myself, right? Will they hear my voice? The other one, who has a seat at the table? So it was one thing to celebrate, oh, we're such a diverse church. But is the diversity in leadership? In our board of directors, in our deacons, you know, are they seen in leadership? And is the diversity of voices heard at that level, that decision-making level? So I never want to plateau. I guess my question to you, Tim, would, how can we keep growing to make sure voices are at the table? How can we intentionally be diverse in our church, in our ministries? You know, I'm so crazy, even on a Sunday, I would say, okay, that's 2 males on the platform. We need a female. Oh, we have all seniors. We need a youth. Oh, we're all middle-aged. We need a, and my staff go, just pick the participants. No, we have all Black people. I need somebody on, you know, and before COVID, we were very intentional on, can someone speak in their native tongue and in English? And, you know, but again, I don't want to plateau. So can you give me some suggestions on how to continue to grow and continue to celebrate?
I mean, without knowing your community well. I mean, it sounds like, I mean, that sounds like the last few Sundays we've had at our church too, right? Where, I feel like we're on similar journeys, obviously not in the exact same place because I don't know your community well enough. But it is very much that, hey, how do we address it, you know, from the pulpit, to, you know, right now, from even just our screens, like what's being represented on our screens, so crucial, right? And as important as that is, that's not the end of the story. Like, sure, you got that done, but hey, the diversity, that's just a skin deep conversation, right? How do we really get in past and beyond that? So, I mean, all I would say at this point is, how do we just keep all of us, how do we stay in that position of humility, right? Because as soon as we feel like we've achieved, that's the place where we've actually, you know, fallen back, right? Where you know, the moment we feel like we've achieved it or gotten some sort of plateau of, oh, I've figured out multiculturalism now, it's that moment that I've articulated it that I've actually, you know, regressed back to, okay, you know, a narrow-minded view of growth. So how do we stay humble? How do we stay hungry? How do we stay that, hey, how do we just keep pushing this envelope? How do we keep pushing the conversation? So with that, it is that long-term conversation of, well, okay, so I've, you know, for yourself or other, whoever, whatever leader it is for their organization is, okay, this is where I see us going in the next 5 years, the next 10 years. But really, how do we get to that place of really thinking, okay, but at some point, I'm not going to be here. So who is going to succeed me? And not just who individually, but who's the body that's going to succeed me, you know, that's going to have a collective voice into this. Really proud of a church that we've been working more so downtown in Toronto, another church, really long, over 100-year heritage. And, you know, the senior pastor just announced that he's gonna step down. And he said, and whoever should succeed me should not look like me and every other pastor for the last 100 years. They better not, right? And for a stronghold like that to be able to make that statement, you know, is dismantling the powers, right? It's addressing and him knowing that as he's done some great things, but how does he acknowledge that, hey, there's more for us all to go, and a lot of it is succession. a quick example that I often think about when I think about that is even at the pulpit, right? So one of the things that I'm pretty proud of is that I started letting go of the pulpit at our church. And so we have a whole group of lay pastors at our church and lay leaders who preach. You know, some of them have their MDivs and some of them don't. Some of them, you know, have taken Bible courses and some of them have not. And so it's them together as the body speaking into the body. And we study scripture together and speak into that. So it's remaining in humility. But yeah, it's, you know, thanks for what you're already doing and how do we continue that journey, all of us.
Great. Michael?
Well, I kind of had two questions and one is easier. One's a softball and one's a hardball. So I think I'll throw the hardball.
Oh, I was going to say, give me the softball.
I think that one of the biggest issues that we're going to be facing as a denomination here in Atlantic Canada, before long, we're already dealing with it, is issues around LGBTQ and how we move forward in the right way on loving our LGBTQ neighbors and congregants and whatnot. And I don't know if this is within the range of the intercultural. I see intercultural ministries on the banner behind you, and I don't know if that's included or not. But I think it's easy as we think about, not easy, easy is the wrong word, but it's easier thinking about race to say, yeah, we want to move all the way across that spectrum to the adaptation. Like, we want to get to that point where we're saying we're breaking down systemic racism and, you know, our leaders in our church and the influential people in our denomination are people of a diverse racial background. But when it comes to the LGBTQ issue, how far do we want to go on that spectrum? How far are we willing to go without compromising our biblical integrity or our diversity of biblical thought on that, on those issues? So I guess it's a probably a very hard question to answer, but that's just something what I'm thinking about. Is it this? It's not quite the same, I don't think, because it's more complicated biblically. So do you have any thoughts on that? I guess maybe is my question.
Thank you for that softball. I have a question. This is how I'll approach it. I mean, honestly, I know that anything I say right now, I'm going to lose some people listening. And if I say the opposite, I'm going to lose the other half of people, you know, on this issue, because it's so complicated. What I think about when I think about that issue, though, is because, yeah, as we've been doing this training, we do find, you know, some leaders, you know, as they process it and they think about the ways of especially ethnocultural equity and those conversations, immediately a lot of leaders have said to me, Tim, this makes me think, especially in some evangelical circles, we might have said we addressed the gender conversation around women in leadership, but we really haven't. Right. And I'm like, yeah, you're right. You know, I mean, our denomination, we ordain women, but every time we think about a new committee and we want diverse leaders, we can never think of, you know, what we would deem quality, you know, female leaders. And it's like, well, why is that? Well, other than just passing one rule, we never developed any of the emerging female leaders in our family. And so that to me, at least on one hand, is a reminder of, yeah, there are what we would call competing diversities that have similarity in terms of the process. And yet it becomes complicated because it's not saying that everything is equal and everything should be included and therefore everything is fine. I mean, that's definitely not what we're saying as a Christian, you know, a development training organization. But at the very least, what are those skill sets where we can at least redeem the fact that God loves everyone? So if God loves everyone, hey, are there you know, competing diversities that we haven't thought of that this emerging conversation can at least bleed into to at least show God's love? I mean, I hopefully everyone can agree that we should love everyone. As soon as you open the LGBTQ conversation, that becomes a very different conversation. Not to say that it's wrong or right, but different communities will have such varying degrees of response to it because of their context, right? So, that's how I'll address it. That it's related, but it's not. It's very related in terms of the how-tos, but it's not necessarily related to say that doesn't automatically mean we're affirming this or that. It just means that, hey, we need to break down some of our own prejudices when we love, when we build friendships with. I mean, we can have an opinion on the LGBTQ community, but do you even have, going back to that people I trust list, do you even know a single person in the LGBTQ community, or is everything you know about them just what you see on TV? Because it's one thing to know someone by name and to know the struggles that they've gone through. It's a whole other thing just to read about it. So, before you say where you stand on it, hey, get to know someone on a personal level. Doesn't have to be your best friend, but they definitely shouldn't just be a face on the television. Build relationship.
Thank you.
Tim, that's a skilled answer to a very difficult question that is in front of us that needs to be processed and needs to be worked through. So thank you for that response. And Michael, thank you for that question. Yeah. Hannah, last question goes to you.
I will not hit a hard ball or throw a hard ball, I guess. But I was thinking about how you started the masterclass with a story. And I'm a Next Generations pastor, so I'm always kind of thinking about, generally as a pastor and especially to this next generation, how we communicate and how we teach and the learning styles and all that kind of thing. And just thinking about how story can just be a powerful vehicle to kind of communicate some of these concepts that might be more difficult to grasp or that people may be defensive towards. And even thinking about how really so much of the Bible is a narrative from another culture and how we talk about that. So I wonder if you would talk about if there's power in narrative. I know story is kind of a universal language. How can we use story to help to push us forward, I guess?
Great question. And very, very intentional. The things that I think about too. Yeah, I mean, I love thinking through pedagogy and andragogy and how we approach putting together, if you saw my slides, they look like they all had different backgrounds. Well, they do, because I've done the presentation so many times, and in different configurations of it, it always, to me, is know your audience, right? And maybe I miss sometimes, but in some cases, yeah, I will start with story. But in other situations, honestly, I've start with statistics, because I know a certain audience and they're like, if you don't start with the statistics first, they're going to write you off right away. So it is tough a little bit sometimes when it's like, well, Garth, who am I speaking to? And Garth's like, I don't know, 45 people. And who are they? I don't know. Like, so it is a little bit tricky. But yeah, how do you know your audience enough to know, hey, what will invite them in? And I do like to engage the topic without typically engaging it directly. So whether it's story, whether it's activity, whether it's, when we were in person, I would play a game with your group, right? I mean, it was doing activity so that you could engage different parts of a person's brain first, and then lead them into the conversation. So, knowing your audience, knowing what connects with them. I mean, knowing that, for example, generationally, as you brought up, I mean, generationally, knowing that a PowerPoint presentation may not connect with them the same way Instagram might connect with them. When my children tell me, oh, if you want to message me, don't email me. I'm like, why not? I email everybody. Do you want me to text you? No, I don't text. And I'm like, well, what do you want? Send me a direct message on Instagram. I'm like, what? Right? Like it doesn't make sense to me, but it's knowing the audience and knowing what references connect with them. We used to jokingly talk about Facebook, right? And the need to get on Facebook. And I actually always used to say, I'll get on Facebook when my children get on, and that's when I feel like I need to. But they could care less about Facebook, which is great, because then I don't have to get on it now, right? But really knowing your audience in order to know what will connect with them to enter in. And yet, it doesn't mean you just stay there. That's your entry point, and then you bring them around. So, with my slide deck today, as an example, right? I tried to go around the circle of, okay, start with story, go into some facts and information about Bible, and then kind of go around the wheel of theory, intercultural theory and what does it mean to develop, and then end off with case studies, which are very practical, application stories. So it was intentional to try to go around the wheel of things, and yet starting in a place that I felt like could be easily accessed by a wider group of leaders.
Fantastic. Well, Tim, we want to thank you so much for taking, you know, this overtime to spend with us after the session today and fielding questions from Leonard, Hannah, and Micah. And thanks to you three as well for participating in this way. And really a valuable conversation that hopefully will spark some thoughts and ideas with the rest of those who will listen to it in the weeks and months to come. So thank you so much. And just for those who may be listening to this at a later date, thanks for taking the time to download or to listen to this as you scroll through your podcasts. We appreciate you giving time to it. So thanks a lot.